If you're someone who has a passion for cut flowers, our environment, and wants to make the world more beautiful, you're in the right place. Whether you're growing flowers for pleasure or profit, I'm on a mission to empower flower enthusiasts and professionals to help change the world around them. Whether you're just starting out and need a helping hand, or are looking to scale a substantial flower business, I'm your cut flower woman. Welcome to the Cut Flower Podcast. Thank you very much. I'm so delighted to welcome Anna May of Dorset Dahlias. I'm so glad I found you to our podcast today. Obviously, the wonderful Instagram led me to you. We're running a series this month to highlight different ways that flower farmers are running their businesses and what stages of business they are. So tell us about your business. Tell us where it started, what you're doing at Dorset Dahlias and so on. What do you do?
I bought my first dahlia about 10 or 11 years ago. I was at the local horticultural society sale in the square, and I saw this and I just thought, I'm very taken with that. So I bought this one dahlia. I didn't really know about dahlias at all. My granny had an enormous garden and she was a proper gardener, but I'd never had much interest. And then I bought that one and I thought, that's the ticket. It was bright pink and it was just fabulous. And it absolutely set me off. So the next year, I think I had 15. And the next year I then had 35, and then it was 100. And then it just kept going because your tubers get too big, you divide them and you get more plants. So that's fantastic. But also they're addictive. And so yes. You think, I've got this colour and I've got this colour. Oh, and I've got this colour in this shape. But do you know what? I haven't got a water lily in this colour, or I haven't got whatever it is, a pom-pom at that.
I don't know how many, they're 44,000 or something I read somewhere. So you could end up with 44,000 varieties.
I don't tell my husband that. That's really how I started growing them. And I started in our kitchen garden where we've got a few beds. And then that got full. Unfortunately, we've got quite a few acres here. So then I started with one patch in the field. And I've just 2 years ago, I moved to a much bigger purpose-made big patch in the field. But it was only about 5 years ago that I realised I just had too many, and that's when I started selling them.
Yeah, so some way they've got to pay for itself, hasn't it? Set up by this time, yeah.
Exactly, and also somewhere for them to go, because there's a limit to how many I could fit in the house and give to friends and that sort of thing. And it was paining me how many were going on the compost or just not having no purpose. So then they started going to various places.
Wow. And what did you do before you started up Dorset Dahlias? What was your job? What did you do?
What I still do now is I'm a food judge. So that's why I couldn't get back to yesterday, because I was in a room all day judging food. I was stuck in a room. So I still do that. That works very well because that's in the spring. It's before most of the dahlia action. So that's what I do for Great Taste Awards. And I mean, years ago, I worked in the city. I've never had any call to gardening. I've never had any. And I don't have green fingers.
Me neither.
The only thing I can grow is a dahlia. I can't grow anything else. Everything else will fall by the wayside. But dahlias, somehow that seems to work.
And also, you've got to grow something that fits in with your lifestyle, haven't you? So if you're growing Christmas trees, that's Christmas, don't you? Your whole of December's wiped out.
Yeah.
If you're growing dahlias, you know that really from the end of May until beginning of October, that's when your season is. You know that, don't you?
I'm
quite envious of a product like that. Actually, I'm quite envious in some respects because A, it's the most productive plant you could possibly have. B, it's probably the most you can make money out of is a dahlia now because it's really in vogue. So I'm actually quite envious.
Yes, and also because you're doing things for a much, much longer season than me. You're very busy and you're juggling the vagaries of the weather for a much longer time. My stress over the weather is in quite a condensed couple of months.
So you grow where you are now and you made purpose beds. How did you make them? Did you have grassland and then you made purpose built?
Yeah, so we ploughed it, rotivated it, we put a load of stuff down to break up the clay a bit, and now we've just got rows and rows, which makes it much easier to have netting to support the dahlias. It's easier to have paths that we mow. So now we've got 7 or 8 seven rows there of about 25 metres each. And then we've kept the vegetable garden still, and that's got about 9 beds in it. So there's a lot of dahlias.
Yeah, not half. And do you propagate from them, or do you put them straight in the ground? How do you? You're propagating.
I've got some on heat at the moment. Just some that I was very keen to get as many cuttings as possible. So they're on heat already, but a lot I will do with dividing, and I'll start that within the next week or two. I'll start dividing up and potting up. But I do both ways just because that's what works. That's what I know that people showing dahlias will generally just do that from cuttings, but they're after a slightly different product to me.
So you will propagate from cuttings, and you will also divide the tuber then? Yeah, you do both ways.
Yeah, I'll do both ways. And I always keep some from last year to just try some seeds. I'll grow some seeds, see what comes up. Sometimes you get a great surprise. Sometimes they're exactly what you were expecting them to be.
I'm tempted to do that. I'm almost really wanted a dahlia named after me. So I was really interested in hybridization, and I've never ever tried it, and I've never done it. But it would just be interesting to see what came up. Who knows what the bumblebee is.
I think so. Yeah, I've got the little bags to put over, but I haven't gone down that particular route yet because it's just one more thing I can't deal with. But I do collect seeds, and then I just think, well, wherever the bee's been, we'll see. And you never know. But they do tend to be singles. They tend to be open. It's just that's how they...
But the bees go. Yeah, so you do your open ones. Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh. And you say you grow on clay. Oh, but dahlias like clay. They don't...
Well, they,
as
they
long as you put enough manure and something in it, isn't it?
Exactly. And also 2 years ago, what was that, 22, when we had that really long, hot spell, and I was seeing terrible pictures of people's nothing growing, people's plots looking really sad. And we were lucky because that clay kept the dahlias going for a really long time, and we were able to avoid having to water any more than necessary. So, in fact, the clay, it's twofold. It's a right pain when you're planting, and particularly when you're taking them up, because come the end of October, November, when it's wet and you've got all these dahlias to pull up, and you just think, I don't know why I do this, because it's backbreaking and depressing. You know that
you have to. One dahlia grower once said to me, dahlias don't like swimming. And I always remember it. Mm-hmm. So it's dahlias don't like swimming. Dahlias don't like swimming. And that year we all dug them up. It's not this year, just gone the year before when it was really wet. Come October and November, we dug them all up. Most people lost their dahlia tubers because they were too wet. They were like solid.
Yeah. Like, I've lost them the first couple of years when I didn't really know what I was doing. I left them in, and I think I lost about 70%. I thought, all right, okay, I can't do that, because we're not that cold down here.
No, Dorset, yeah.
Yeah, but we are very wet where we are. Yeah.
See, I've got the big advantage of only that year did I lift some, and then I vowed I would never, ever lift again. And I have never lifted again. And the only reason I'd lift is if the tube is getting far too big, which they do. I know they do. But lifting just fills me with horror. And we're really lucky that we're on, in one respect, we're really lucky because we're on a quarry. So it's near a river. So actually what we've got going on around us at the moment is mineral extraction, because it's actually gravel underneath. Yeah. And so our dahlias love it because it's free draining, and we do not lift. And we're in the middle of the country, Milton Keynes, so it's warmish. It's not cold and it's not warm. So we don't lift. But the problem with that, if you don't lift, you keep adding more and more, because they say, just order some more dahlias this year. And I order, goodness knows, I order mine in from Holland, and I do sell them as tubers. I probably ordered in, dare I say, 3,000. Which is madness. So I probably sold 2,000, and my team is saying to me, can't you sell some more? Because they're thinking, have we really got to put all these in?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
A small business. Do reels get you reeling? Is SEO just a 3 letters put together? Content planning something you know you should be doing, but just never get round to it? Do join our Growth Club online. What is it? It's a supportive community. It's all about growing your business. It provides trainings, and guest speakers join us every month.
Is it time to work on your business and not in it? The link for more information is in the show notes.
But they're just so fantastic, aren't they? And the thing about the tubers is they do pay for themselves very quickly. And you just, and there's always, as I said before, there's always that extra colour. There's that extra one. You never know. And there's always some that get lost. There's always some that don't come back. And I've got a couple actually at the moment, a couple on heat that I really want to come back, and I'm not sure they're going to. And they were tricky ones to source. And so if I've lost those, I've lost those. But
have you got them as heat on heat maps? Have you got them on heat maps undercover, like in a tunnel or greenhouse or something?
In a tunnel.
Yeah. Because I haven't got mine on heat mats. I've just got mine just doing their own little thing, but maybe I need to heat them up.
This is just for a few that I just wanted to, the particularly ones I've only got one of, I just wanted them. There's no splitting to be done. And if I wanted extras, then I needed to do that. And some of them are romping away. I've taken cuttings already, but some I don't know. And they've all been stored the same way over the winter. So there's no real rhyme or reason as to why some survive and some don't. It's just one of those things.
And dare I ask you, what your favourite charm is, isn't it?
I would say...
You can have a few. I'll let you have a few.
I think we'll look at all the different shapes. I think that Linda's Baby.
Okay.
It's a classic. It's just so popular and it's so pretty and it just bobs away there, just looking so dreamy and soft pink and just fabulous.
Yeah.
I love Great Silence.
Absolutely. I'm going to write these down. My goodness.
Gorgeous Waterloo.
Which is an excuse to buy some more.
Yes, exactly. You must. It's just so vibrant. So vibrant. I just love it. And it is always one of the tallest. It will usually grow as tall, if not taller than me.
Yeah.
Labyrinth. Couldn't be without Labyrinth. I mean, I'm very much peachy, corally.
They're in vogue. That's what everybody wants.
I just love them. And you get a collection of those together. Cornell Bronze is hugely popular,
Trying to get them is quite a challenge, Cornell Bronze, trying to get them as a tuber.
Yeah, what else? Oh, I quite like a Preference or a Henriette.
They're
pretty, pale, spiky. And I actually, same shape, but different colour, Chat Noir. I love Chat Noir, very dramatic. I haven't found so much cool for the dark dahlias in the last couple of years.
No.
All those burgundies, deep reds, the dark ones, the Sam Hopkins, that sort of thing. For some reason, not quite so popular.
I'm growing some this year, only because I thought the trend might be dark with apricots again this year. Who knows? So I'm growing some Ivanetta, which are nearly black.
Yeah, I like that. I like that, yeah. But I have them all. I do. Yeah. I'm like you. I grow all those colours because you don't know exactly what the trend is going to be. But also there are different people like different things. Last year, I would say just the majority of brides wanted the peachy coral.
Yes, 100%.
So much less in maybe 4 or 5 years ago, it was all about the whites and the pale pinks and the blush.
Yes.
But not so much. But I'm still growing them because there will always be a bride who does want those colours. So I try to grow most things. I'm not mad about yellow.
I'm not mad about yellow. I grow a few yellow, but more yellow with something else, like a Beau Delicious yellow and ready. I don't grow pure yellow.
No, I got a couple of primrose, pale primrose yellow, because if it's a pale pastely colours for a bride, but nothing too bright.
No. It's weird, isn't it? We're going to have to see. The Pantone colour of the year is blushy pinky this year, and that kind of dictates maybe the trend. So we're growing lots of coral flowers anyway. Yeah. And lots of dahlias. I used to have a love-hate relationship with Café au Lait, and I've still got a love-hate relationship with it. I've got a hate relationship with it because it's very tall. It's very big, and there's not much you can do with it.
Yeah.
In terms of putting it in bouquets and that sort of thing. But a bride still loves it. So I've got a love-hate relationship with it, and it needs a massive amount of support, otherwise the whole thing will fall over. It wasn't built, I don't think, for that big flower at the end, but I love that. And my other favourite, probably of all time, is Burlesque. So
so useful.
It's my useful one.
Yeah. I love Bolesca. Yes, I do grow that. Café au lait, I find, is a right pain, actually. It's really late.
Yeah.
For me, really late to come up. It's temperamental. About four years ago, I had more café au lait than I could shake a stick at, and nobody wanted
it. Wanted it.
Yeah. So then I grew hardly any the following year, and everybody wanted it.
Yeah.
I've got one tuber now that I kept last year that is really small heads.
Ah, so that's better.
Which is really good. And so I've got that one on heat because I want to propagate that. Because if I can have them with a manageable size head, then that's great. But otherwise, too big, they just flop. And that's the reason I don't really grow many of the dinner plates, because they're just too big for the florists that I sell to.
They don't want them. No, can't use them. They'll have a burlesque or any time over a café au lait because they can't use them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I've got a couple of, what have I got? A couple of Otto's Thrill and Penhill Watermelon, just because you get the odd person who wants them. But I don't favour them. And I just, they're just too big. They're too unwieldy.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk about support. Are you using jute netting or netting? What do you do for support?
I use horizontal netting all the way down all the beds. And then for some of the bigger ones, also I'll use canes as well. Yeah. Sometimes they need them. In an ideal world, the netting will be enough. I don't use jute because it rots. So I'm afraid I do use plastic because it
comes back year on year.
So I think I work out what's better, replacing it or netting. So I use the plastic netting one. And it's mostly okay. But you know what dahlias are like. They grow big and tall. They've got lots of flowers, lots of big, heavy blooms. And you get the wrong wind, then you can have a disaster. But
we had an experiment last year, which was really an experiment, and also because we didn't have enough time, we didn't support any of ours. So we didn't support any of our dahlias at all, but we grew them so close together. And they were quite close to a windshield because there was trees all along the edge, or even though they were in sun. And they grew enormously, like 6 foot. And they all supported each other. And yes, we lost a few.
Yeah.
But honestly, we got away with it, and I'm not sure we're going to get away with it again, but it was quite funny to just do it and see what would happen.
I think that's good, and I think that they do grow very tall if they're looking for the light, and they have to compete for the light if there's lots of them around, because that's what it tends to happen in our vegetable garden, because it's surrounded with hedges. We tend to get them growing quite well because they're tall. But I think, well done. If that worked, I would keep going with it.
I think it was a bit of a fluke, really, more than anything else. I think it was like, woo.
No, but it's fantastic if they're going to hold themselves up.
I know, because support is quite a big job, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then they're harder to cut when they're supported.
Yeah, they really are. So if you can try that again, I'd be all for that.
So what do you do with your flowers? What markets do you do? What kind? How do you get rid of them?
I've got some florists that buy from me every week for their shops. But the most of what I do is for either wholesale, for florists, for events and weddings, that sort of thing, or for DIY brides who will buy. So these people will buy anything from maybe 60 to 500 or 600, depending on what they need. So that's the majority of what I do. But I've got a couple of florists who have them in their shop every week. But yeah,
brilliant. You've got to find your market, haven't you? Because it's almost, we decided one year we were going to grow tulips. Tulips would be a really nice thing to grow. It's an early thing. But you've got to grow really unusual tulips to make any money out of it. If you're going to grow yellow and red, forget it. You know?
Yeah.
So we grew tulips that were 1.2 metres tall. We grew very different. People look at them and go, is that a tulip? And we grew them all. Wait for this. We bought 30,000 tulip bulbs and we put them in. And we haven't really worked out who we were going to sell them to at that point, which is a real cardinal sin. And I tell people on all my courses, of course, have a market and make sure. But this particular time, we didn't. It was a cardinal sin. And so as they started to bloom, we started to think, oh, no, what are we going to do with all these tulips, these 30,000 tulips? So because they were quite unusual, one day I was a bit Del Boyish. I loaded the van up and took it down to London and opened it. And I went down to Victoria and Scarlett, who's a very well-known wedding florist. And I think she employs something like 10 staff full-time, massive florist in Kensal Green. And I went in and they were really harassed and they were doing big events and I was really nervous. And I just went in and said, oh, look, I've got some tulips in the back of my van. Do you want to buy some? And they all looked at me as if I'd gone mad because they were all normally buy from Covent Garden. And then Victoria said, OK, I'll come and have a look, but I've only got a minute. So I thought, oh, I was really harassed. So I only got a minute. So out she comes and I opened the back of the van, she buys the whole. And there were 1,000 tulips in there on that day. different, but I think should work out your market in advance. And this was a bit seat of pants. But what that taught me, two things, is that you shouldn't do it like that. And secondly, that you should do it earlier and have your wholesale florists all lined up, ready to take whatever you've got.
Yeah, but good for you. Good for you. And you,
boy.
And you knew what they were like. You knew they were fabulous tulips. So it
yes,
was
I did. Fun. Yeah. And I bought the same again because obviously I'm stupid. And so I'm ready now, but I'm a bit more prepared because because most of the 30,000 we pulled out on the bulb to get stem length, but we left a lot in. So they're all going to come back as long as the ones that we've already planted this year. Who knows?
So you're going to have a lot of tulips. Yeah.
Tulip mania. It's going to be mad.
It's difficult though, getting your market, because that is definitely one of the tricky balances is you think, oh, you sold this many last year, so I need to grow this many. But then some weeks you just think, I haven't got very many orders and I've got all these dahlias and I can give away only so many. And I can, as I said to you, I can only have so many in the house.
In every room, it's a bit much.
Yeah, every room. But then, and that does get a bit, it just gets a bit depressing because you think, I've grown them all. Yes. Everybody want them. Always, first couple of weekends in September, you've got 10 weddings, thousands and thousands going out. But nothing for the couple of weeks before that or after that. And that's a bit of a headache, is that you've got to have them all there, all waiting in the field. And you think, come on, somebody.
We've been doing the London flower markets as well, because I suppose we're about an hour from London. And on a Sunday, that's fine. And that does really well because they're in lovely areas and people come and buy their cheeses and meats and their London flower markets. And you have to be within 50 miles of the M25, I think. And that worked for us. We then sold the rest of our tulips there, to be fair. We would take down 3,000 tulips and we'd sell out.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it?
We'll be doing that again. Yeah, so I think it's about having those markets ready, isn't it? And about having enough wholesale florists and enough event florists who know you and enough.
Yeah.
Don't get me.
Exactly. And then that brings you on to doing all the, you've got to keep up with all the social media and stuff.
Oh, yes.
You've got to do it. And you just think, I've got to make sure that, A, I love it because I love Instagram, because you've got everybody putting things on. You've got lots of lovely flowers.
You
see what people are doing and I love all that, but equally I need people to see them because then they will buy them. But obviously a lot of people in Instagram are miles away, other countries are not going to be buying them.
No, but so what you have to do, two things probably with that, you probably just have to put your location tagged on all your own posts so you get a location of where you are, so therefore it comes up a bit better there. And two, maybe, I've often thought about drying dahlias, but I think it's quite tough. I think they're quite fragile, but mailing out dried dahlias, maybe.
Yeah, I see Philippa Stewart at Just Dahlias doing that, and hers are incredible.
I know.
Absolutely amazing. And I think, I just don't think I can add another thing to my to-do list. I just think I would be absolutely mad to do that. But they do look incredible, and I had no idea before I saw hers that dahlias...
I didn't think they dried very well.
Dried like that with the colours, really good, strong colours.
I think you've got to choose which ones. You've probably got to take your burlesquers, don't take your big ones, take your smaller ones.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to try it. I'm going to try it this year, not commercially, but I'm going to try it and see how it works. Because I have to say, the demand for dried flowers over the winter was huge for us. So things like straw flowers and honesty and limonium and gypsophilia, all fine. I might just see whether I can add a daily, but I think there's a particular way of drying them.
I'd say this one, don't know if you can see that.
Yes, it's beautiful.
That's one that got knocked off. The head got knocked off in the car when I was delivering some. And I found it. And I actually think it's nicer than that particular dahlia is when it's fresh. I don't like that dahlia when it's fresh. But that, I just think it's really sweet. So I keep it on my desk.
Some of them maybe. I don't know. It's about keeping the income going all year, isn't it? It's quite difficult.
Yeah.
So... we're talking about highs and lows now, the lovely world of social media. We'll come on to that. What do you think has been your greatest challenge as a flower farmer business? Some highs and lows. What do you think they are?
I think my infrastructure wasn't ideal initially, and I was juggling without, I've got a tunnel now, but initially I was juggling with just a greenhouse and just storing them. And so they were, I stored a load one year. I lined the greenhouse with fleece and I thought I'd protected it because I just didn't have anywhere else to keep them. and I lost a load in the cold. And
in
that
the frost.
Yeah. And that was really depressing because I was going through them, just finding what could be salvaged. And my salvaged pile was considerably smaller than my compost pile. And that was really depressing.
Heart-wrenching.
And it was my fault because I was the one storing them, but I didn't have an alternative. And so after that, because we're waiting to build a shed, and until we can do that, I had to go and borrow a shed to put them in. And then I was to-ing and fro-ing. So that was a bit of a faff. So that's another reason I'm propagating some, because instead of keeping 1,000 tubers, which was just too much for me to try and juggle, that's why I think I only kept about 400 or 500 last year, with the intention of propagating some, splitting some. So I still have my stock of about 1,000, but I didn't have to store. So that was a big...
Yeah, storing.
That was a big mistake. And that was really depressing because it's also such a waste of money.
I think that's the thing. If you sit and look at that pile and you go, right, there's 500 tubers there. And let's say on average in retail, you're paying, if you're lucky, £5 a tuber. Yeah, so then you look at it and go, 5 times 500, that is a lot of money. Oh dear, I've only got 100 over here. That is depressing. It is depressing.
It's really depressing because not only have you lost them and that much money, but you're going to have to fork out to replace. So it's double the money, isn't it? So that's been depressing. But then there's something magical about dahlias, isn't there? I suppose it's like childbirth or something. You're walking through all those, just those rows and rows of just unbelievably beautiful flowers in the summer, and you forget.
It's like childbirth.
Yeah, I know, because otherwise you wouldn't do it. Not I wouldn't, because they're the digging up and then the planting again and all that. I do dread those 2 weekends when we've got to get them all in and then when we've got to get them all out.
All out. Yeah, they have to move to Milton Keynes. So if you were going to recommend to somebody to go and be a flower farmer, what would you recommend? I mean, I always think, personally, to be a flower farmer is a blooming hard job, number one. And two, I think if people have got a full-time job, I always advise them not to give up their full-time job to begin with. I say transition really slowly. Give one day up a week. And maybe you earn £50,000 a year and that one day is £10,000. Give that up and earn £10,000 and then work it out. And then if you give 2 days up, earn £20,000 and then work it up. If you give up your day job at £50,000 and presume you're going to earn it in flower farming, it isn't going to happen. It's not going to happen for 3 years if you're lucky and have built really diverse income streams. Lots of ways you can earn lots of money in different ways. And so that was always been my number one advice. And number two, it's great fun. There's absolutely no doubt it's great fun. It's 12 months of the year and it's hard work, physically hard work as well. So what would you say to him? I think it's the best job in the world, but...
I think you're right. I think you've got to be very sensible and not just go, I'm chucking everything in, this is what I'm going to do. You really need to slowly fold it into your existing work because it is something you can do evenings and weekends. So it is something that you can integrate into your life without losing your income, because there are disasters like me and the dahlias in the greenhouse. So you really do not want to be putting all your eggs into one basket. And I think people would be surprised how much you can achieve evenings and weekends. So I absolutely agree with you. That's what I would do. And I would also, I would make sure that you are going to have somebody to sell your flowers to. Make sure you're not deciding to be a flower farmer in an area that's already got, I don't know how many, like 10 other flower farmers within 5 mile radius, because they're already doing it. They've established a market, they've got their customers, and there's no guarantee that those people will also want to buy from you, or there's no reason why they would stop buying from somebody they've bought from for years. So I think that's really important. And be aware of your limitations.
Because financially and time.
Sometimes I just think I can't be bothered. I cannot be bothered to keep going today. I've got to stop, or I can't afford to do another 2 heated mats this year. I'm going to have to make do with what I've got. You can't go mad either with what you think you're able to achieve physically and with time. When you've got a family, when you've got other things to do, and with money, I think.
Yeah, so, I think you've really got to watch the money, because it's quite easy to get carried away in lots of ways. It's easy to buy loads of seeds, for instance, because they seem cheap. A packet seems cheap. But you haven't worked out the compost and the planting and the time. And the, yeah, I think we've been doing it 15 years now, and we have now got to a price per stem in terms of what it takes us to grow it.
Yeah,
because I've got 4 staff now. So that's quite a large overhead. What they're employed 12 months of the year. They don't just do the summer. So in 6 months of the year, you're not earning anything. So how do you cope for that? It is the best job in the world, but you've got to work it all out and be really cautious about what you're spending.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why it's very much me. My husband helps me with the heavy stuff. I've got a friend who helps me a lot with the mental stuff.
Yeah.
And also with some of the physical stuff out there. But I can't really go to having a lot of staff, because they're just, because my market is, it's not all year. It's only for a few months. But, you know, there is a finite amount of what I can grow and what I can sell, and therefore what I can make. So
it's the same. I spoke to a peony farmer. She's the same. She's got 3 weeks and she's got to flog everything she's got in 3 weeks. And she does really well and makes really good income in those weeks. And the rest of the time she works as a supply teacher. Because what is she going to be doing in December and January, February and March?
Exactly. And so that raises the blood pressure, though, doesn't it? Because you think, I've got 3 weeks and that's it. And you don't want to have anything go wrong.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The new Plants of Distinction Autumn Catalogue is now available and contains over 1,000 different flower and vegetable seeds, with over 150 new and exciting varieties added this year alone. Cut flowers in an extensive array of individual colours are a speciality, and added to this are many unusual annual and perennial seeds, together with the hard-to-find heritage favourites. So if you're looking for something a little different, be it choice cutting flowers suitable for both fresh and dried arrangements, or cottage garden and container growing varieties, you need look no further. You can download or request a copy of the new autumn catalogue by visiting the website plantsofdistinction.co.uk, where an exclusive 30% discount is available to all podcast listeners when ordering seeds by using the discount code CUTFLOWER30.
No, it's really tough. It's tough, but it's lovable. So as a flower farmer, you do need to be everything, don't you? You need to be a marketeer. You definitely need to be a social media whiz. For me, it helps that I was a marketing director. So people say to me, well, Ros, how have you got 158,000 Instagram followers? Because that was my job and I know what I've got to do.
Yeah.
So I've got a real advantage, 100%. You need to be an accountant. Don't like doing that. That's boring. You need to be a grower. Of course, you need to know everything. You've got to be a customer service guru as well. You've got to be able to answer all those questions, and you've got to be really nice to everybody. So what do you think is challenging? What do you think is the most challenging for you in a business arena?
The most challenging, I think that as we covered, the social media is a struggle, because I know I've got to do it, and I do find that quite hard to do. I'm not a great networker. I'm a bit reticent, a bit British and reticent sometimes about going into a florist and going, hi, do you know that I'm down the road? I grow dahlias, you know, that sort of thing. I know I need to push myself a bit more, because firstly, because I do. And secondly, because there's other people around here that grow. There's nobody right here that just grows dahlias. There's a lot of other really good growers. So I need to keep on top of it. So I think you've got to push yourself in a business way.
Deep breath, walk in. And also the thing I always remember when I'm selling, are the 2 pieces of advice I give to flower farmers. The first one is, between 9 and 10 in the morning, what are you selling? And they go, what do you mean? And I say, between 9 and 10, just think about selling something. And that doesn't mean you're going to sell something that day. That means you're going to plan, you're going to do something on social media, you're going to have a special offer, you're going to get your customers in advantage. And between 9 and 10, that's all you do. You don't think about anything else but prospecting between 9 and 10.
Yeah.
And then the second thing I want you to do is just remember that your product's the best thing in the world. And actually, those people in that florist shop want your product.
Yeah. Like you with the tulips.
Yeah, desperate. Yeah. I'm going for it.
Yeah, that's
true. And we all have it. We have the imposter syndrome, and what if, and what if they say no, and out of 20, 18 might say no, but 2 might say yes.
Yes, so you're right. I like the idea of the small window, because that doesn't feel so daunting. You don't think, I've got to do this all day.
No.
You say, right, I'm really going to focus on that hour. I think that's really good advice.
So it's like between 9 and 10, you go, okay, I've only got 10 wholesale florists. How do I get another 10? So this week I'm going to spend 5 hours, 1 hour a day, and I'm going to get another 2 each day. And is that break it down into it? Because otherwise it's, oh, I've got to make 20 reels. And I do a reel a day. Sometimes I batch them. Yeah, I do them a lot. And that's why I've got 158,000 Instagram followers, because it's all in video. It's not in static. It's all in reels, really.
You see, what you're very good at is you put yourself in front of the camera.
I do. And sometimes I don't feel wonderful. I have to tell you, sometimes it's, oh, God, this dungarees look. And I can tell you that people will tell you what you look like in it anyway. And sometimes, and I've just, you become very thick skinned. And I sometimes about the thing, I don't feel it today. But then I think, and I can tell you that the reels that I'm in, the engagement is much bigger than the reels I am not in.
See, and I'm always impressed by all those ones that you do. And then I'll see somewhere somebody's making comments on this is how to engage, show your face. And I just think, who wants to see my face?
It's
about the dahlias. It's about the dahlias.
It's not.
I find it such a struggle.
Not about the dahlias. It's not really. It's not. Because I could probably grow as nice dahlias as you, but it's not about the dahlias. It's about your story. Why are you doing it? How are you doing it? Oh, you're on clay. That must be really difficult. And some of your struggles, I can tell you that if you'd done a reel on your dahlias you had to throw away, that probably would have got more following than anything else. Because it's about kind of integrity and about your, that it's real. Life isn't full of gingham beautiful dresses and going through the dahlia fields and picking them and isn't that lovely. That's part of it. Of course it's part of it. But it's 99% of it isn't. 90% of it is digging those. So if you, I would just advise you take video of everything you're doing. Like when you're out there putting them in and it's digging, it's really tough. And you've been out there 8 hours and it starts to rain. Yeah. That's the reality.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. And I was just thinking when I was walking the dogs earlier and I walked past the beds and they've got puddles in.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
So wet. And I just thought, you know what? I should take a picture of that. Never mind a picture of lovely, jolly dahlias that I put on. That's what I should do.
Then you, if you took video of it now and just stored it on your phone, later on you can do the before and after.
Yeah.
Which is, this is the reality of it.
Yeah.
This is what it looked like
in
March. And look at it now, isn't it fabulous? Yeah. So there's all of that,
yeah. You're very good at that. I see some of the stuff you do. I'm also not entirely sure how you've got enough time in the day to do what you do.
I store it all. I take loads of video all the time. All the time.
Yeah.
So I'll have a massive amount on my phone. I'll have all the tulips we planted last year, for instance, in bloom. And then I'll show you it now. And I've already got the footage from last year. Yeah. So I'll have stored it all. So it's a case of storing it all. And actually then it's really easy. It's really easy because I'll follow a trend and I'll follow a template that's already there and I'll just create it.
Yeah.
And I can create them. And that's my between 9 and 10. That's my before I even think about something, create a reel today kind of instance.
Yeah.
And what am I going to sell? And honestly, but you've got a lot of followers. You've done okay, actually.
Yeah.
You have got a lot of followers.
Yeah, I know, but I just think that's the appeal of a jolly dahlia. I think if everybody's having a rubbish day or there's such depressing stuff in the news, people love to see a jolly dahlia. But I think you're right. I think it also is worth saying, because obviously I show the nice ones, not every dahlia I grow looks like this. So actually that's a very valid point, is show a bit of reality.
The ones that have gone over, the ones that are mouldy at the back,
and
the ones you can't sell.
Yeah, and the things that have gone horribly wrong, or your favourite one that snapped in the wind or something. Yes,
definitely. It's. I think that's what people buy. They buy a story. They don't buy a dahlia. I hate to say that.
Yeah, no.
But your Gritter, everybody on here on the podcast is now going to come and follow you, because they're going to put all your Insta. Tell us what your Instagram handle is, and we will put it in the show notes as well.
Dorset Dahlias.
Dorset Dahlias. Couldn't be any easier. At Dorset Dahlias.
Easier.
So do go and follow Anna at Dorset Dahlias. It is beautiful. The feed is beautiful. There's no doubt. And people love a beautiful feed.
Yeah.
And I can see your dog. And people love beautiful dogs too. Got the same as me. It's all of that. It's your life, isn't it? Without going too into your life. So the things I wouldn't share, of course. But there's a point, isn't there? It's about.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. So what next? Just more dahlias?
More dahlias, but not more beds. Because I think that what I've got now, I think we've probably got about, it's about a quarter of an acre that's actually, that we actually use. But I can't do more than that without having somebody else properly helping me. And for the reasons we've already discussed, I need to keep it more or less at just me. Enough dahlias to fill the beds, enough dahlias to fill the vegetable gardens, never mind the vegetables. That's, I think, where we're at. But it's lovely seeing them going far afield. And then people will send me pictures of their weddings and what have you. And I love seeing that because I see them in the field or I see them in the buckets when I see them actually
being used in a bouquet.
Yeah, something like that. I'm so thrilled because I think, I love not only because I grew that, but because whoever the person is, they love it. They love it and it's on their big day. So that's something that's so
sweet. Why you do it.
In fact, just seeing somebody when they come and collect their flowers or if I'm delivering them, when they see them, and it's maybe probably the Friday before their wedding, the day before their wedding, and you see their face when they see all these and you just think that makes
it. Coromets. I know. I know that's why you do it ultimately. Whereabouts in Dorset are you so people can find you as well?
We're West Dorset. We're between Bridport and Lyme Regis and just by the border into Devon.
You've got a lovely area. Yes. That's what you've got. You've got visions of dahlia fields near the sea. What more could you want?
I know. It's lovely. With spaniels.
With spaniels, honestly, you've added the spaniels, that's it now. Mine's in here sniffing and snorting and thinking I want attention. But yeah, it's really funny because she hasn't been walked yet, but she will do. Anna, it's lovely to have you over and lovely to be on our podcast. And we will put all of your website, your social media handles all in the show notes. We'll let you know when it goes live and we will tag you in it.
Thank you. Lovely to talk to you. I feel I've had so much advice. Good advice.
You can always ask me. I'm always very happy. I just love it. I love flower farming just generally. And yeah, I did it as a part-time job for years and years before I jumped. And I knew nothing about growing. I had 3 raised beds and I thought, what do I do here then? I have no idea. I had no family who knew anything. So it was
a story then because you've made a huge success.
Yeah, I knew nothing. Zero. Absolute zero. And yeah, I've learned a lot along the way and lots of failures, I can assure you. But it's great. It's a full-time job now, obviously, and more, 7 days a week. But it's a nice way to make a living.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Oh, it's
I'll
been
keep
so
you posted. And you, stay in touch.
I will do. Thank you so much.
And if I'm in Dorset, I'll come and visit you.
Definitely. Definitely do.
I'll come and say hello. Hello to you in the spaniel. That's fine. Brilliant. Lovely. Thanks very much, Anna.
Take care.
Bye. I look forward to next week's episode. Please don't forget to subscribe and rate and review on your podcast app. We do have some wonderful free resources on our website at thecutflowercollective.co.uk. We also have 2 free Facebook communities, which we'd love you to join. For farmers or those who want to be flower farmers, we have Cut Flower Farming, Growth and Profit in Your Business. And our other free Facebook group is Learn with the Cut Flower Collective for those starting out on their flower journey. All of the links are below. I look forward to getting to know you all.